باسم مؤسسة الكويت للتقدم العلمي نرحب بكم أجمل ترحيب في هذا المؤتمر العالمي الأول بعنوان العولمة والخليج الاقتصاد والأمن. أيها الحفل الكريم, please everybody will find the head speaker for translation, direct translation. You can use the في هذا المؤتمر العالمي الأول والذي تنظمه مؤسسة الكويت للتقدم العلمي بالتعاون مع جامعة لندن للاقتصاد والعلوم السياسية LSE. الآن الكلمة لمدير عام مؤسسة الكويت للتقدم العلمي الأستاذ الدكتور علي عبد الله الشملان, فليتفضل لإلقاء كلمته.
Somebody has to come to show them. For instant translation, please try channel 3 to plug into channel 3 in the armrest. I will wait. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. سعادة الأخ بدر مشاري الحميضي وزير المالية السابق, سير هوارد ديفيس مدير جامعة لندن الاقتصاد والعلوم السياسية, إخواني أعضاء مجلس الإدارة, السيدات والسادة الحضور, أرحب بكم في مؤسسة الكويت التقدم العلمي, شاكرا مشاركتكم في حفلة افتتاح المؤتمر الأول حول العولمة والخليج الذي أتي باكرة لسلسلة المؤتمرات المقرر عقدها بين المؤسسة وجامعة لندن العلوم للاقتصاد والعلوم السياسية ضمن الاتفاقية المبرمة بين الطرفين. لقد سعت المؤسسة جاهدة من أجل تسهيل التواصل بين صناع القرار في الكويت والخليج العربي ونظرائهم في الخارج, ضمانا لتوفير الأرضية المناسبة والمشتركة للتوصل إلى أفضل الطرق للمناقشة وحل المشكلات وقضايا ملحة, وحفزا لنقل استراتيجيات التطور العلمي والتكنولوجي في الكويت والمنطقة. ولقد تكلل سعينا بتوفيق من الله بالنجاح, فأصبح المؤسسة من خلال برامجها الدولية سلسلة من الاتفاقيات الأكاديمية والبحثية, وفرت منهلا معينا للبحث والدراسة مع كبرى الجامعات العالمية. إن اعتذار معالي نائب رئيس مجلس الوزراء ووزير الخارجية الشيخ الدكتور محمد صباح السالم في اللحظات الأخيرة للتحضير للمؤتمر عن عدم تمكنه من المشاركة فيه نتيجة للظروف المحلية المتلاحقة لم ينقص من تواصله مع المؤسسة, ترجمة لإيمان القيادة السياسية بأنه لم يعد بالإمكان سبر أغوار العلم والمعرفة بمعزل عن دول سبقت في هذا المجال. كما أن جهود معاليه تركت أثرا بارزا في إبرام أولى اتفاقياتنا الدولية مع جامعة هارفارد منذ ما يقارب عقدا من الزمن, حين كان معالي سفير دولة الكويت لدى الولايات المتحدة الأمريكية, مكملا دور إخواني أعضاء مجلس الإدارة في رسم دور أكبر فاعلية وأكثر إلماما بالتغيرات المحيطة, مما أضاف أدوارا جديدة تصدت لها المؤسسة لتبقى ملاذا للعلم والعلماء ومنارة تهدي إلى سبيل المعرفة. إن للسياسة والاقتصاد نصيبا من أولويات برامج المؤسسة نابعا من تجاربها التي مرت بها في العقود الماضية، ومنطلقا من تراثها الانفتاحي على دول العالم، وإيمانا منها بأن السياسة والاقتصاد مصطلحين مترادفين في عالم اليوم الذي ما انفك فيه تشابك سمة لم تظهر تأثيراتها إلا عندما بانت في الأفق ملامح الفوضى الاقتصادية الحالية. وما دعوتنا للشخصيات لها بصمات على مسيرة الاقتصاد في دولة الكويت كسيد بدر مشاري الحميضي الذي أمضى جزءا من حياته العملية مترجما للسياسات الاقتصادية للدولة كوزير سابق للمالية ومدير للصندوق الكويتي للتنمية الاقتصادية العربية لما يقارب 20 عاما، إلا محاولة لفهم أفضل للوضع الاقتصادي برمته. لذلك كله نعتقد بأننا قد أحسننا الاختيار في توقيت إشهار برنامج الكويت لدي LSE منذ 2 مضيا مع جامعة عريقة تمثل مركزا عالميا يهتم بالتدريس والبحث معا عبر سلسلة متكاملة من علوم الاجتماع والسياسة والاقتصاد منذ 1895، حيث جاء تصنيفها في مطلع هذا القرن في المرتبة الثانية ضمن أكبر 200 جامعة وكلية علمية للبحوث المتقدمة، ناهيك عن أن عددا من موظفيها هم أعضاء نشطون في الهيئات الاستشارية الحكومية كلجنة السياسة النقدية ولجنة قانون الأجور في المملكة المتحدة. يغطي البرنامج وقفية للأستاذية في الاقتصاد والعلوم السياسية يشغله حاليا أستاذ دكتور تيم بزلي الذي باشر اهتمامه بالقضايا المؤثرة على التنمية الاقتصادية والفنية في دول الخليج، مما سيسهم في إبراز دولة الكويت في الأوساط الأكاديمية المرموقة ولدي جوائر صناع السياسة في العالم. كما يغطي برنامج لأبحاث التنمية والإدارة الحكومية والعولمة في دول الخليج عن طريق تمويل أبحاث يقوم بها باحثون متخصصون وشبكات أكاديمية تركز على التنمية الأكاديمية لجامعات الكويت ودول الخليج من خلال تأسيس شبكة اتصال تربطها بالمملكة المتحدة وسلسلة من الحلقات النقاشية تعقد لإطلاع الأكاديميين وصناع السياسة على نتائج الأبحاث، وأخيرا مؤتمرا عالميا يعقد كل 2 بالتناوب يهدف إلى تنظيم منتدى متجانس رفيع المستوى تناقش من خلاله قضايا مستجدة تواجه الكويت ودول الخليج، وهو ما نشارك بافتتاحه اليوم. وأخيرا أود أن أكرر الشكر لكل من تكبد العناء وحضر، وأخص بذلك زملائي من جامعة لندن للإقتصاد والعلوم السياسية والسادة الحاضرين ورؤساء الجلسات، متمنيا للجميع مشاركة مثمرة. والسلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.
أيها الحفل الكريم، الكلمة الآن لمدير جامعة لندن للاقتصاد والعلوم السياسية LSE السير هوارد ديفيز. It's a pleasure to give the floor to Sir Howard Davis, Director of London School of Economics LSE. Please.
Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you, first of all, to KFAS for hosting today's event, and particularly to Director General Mr. Al-Shamlan for his kind words about the collaboration which we are developing together. The list of prestigious organisations with which KFAS already collaborates and the video that we saw shows, given the links with Harvard in the United States in particular and Oxford, that it is a great tribute to the LSE that we have been chosen as a partner by KFAS. Clearly, you are able to select from the very top academic institutions in the world the people with whom you wish to work. And so we are very honoured that we have been included now in that list. The project, which you briefly described and outlined, Mr. Al-Shamlan, of course has had quite a long gestation. I think you and I first discussed this in 2003, and indeed my predecessor, Lord Giddens, had earlier discussions even than that. But I think perhaps in retrospect, a long gestation period was quite a good thing. In the first place, it allowed the two organisations to get to know each other. This is my third visit to Kuwait to come here. And it also allowed us to think through quite what it was we wanted to put together. You referred to Tim Besley as the Kuwait chair, and of course there is also the activity under David Held and his Centre for Global Governance, of which this conference is a very important part. And I also think that the time we took to get this programme right means that we are beginning this series of conferences and this series of papers on issues about global governance, and particularly in the Gulf, at an extremely interesting moment for the world in general, and indeed for the GCC states in particular. And I think it's fair to say that had Mr. Al-Shamlan and I in 2003 sat down and said, what is it that we want to talk about, I think we would have been talking about post-Iraq war issues and reconstruction, etc. And the issues that we are facing now in the world are really quite unrecognizable from what we would have chosen 5 or 6 years ago to think about. At that time, of course, the economy was very strong. There was barely a cloud on the horizon. We had synchronized world economic growth. Kuwait reconstruction was, of course, doing very well. If we looked further in the Gulf, we could see a dramatic transformation in Dubai, and perhaps the biggest issues in the region were which footballer was buying which island in the Palm development in Dubai. There were oil-rich states throughout the Gulf awash with cash and doing the famous reaching for yield, looking for exciting, risky assets in which to invest. But now, of course, all that has changed. We are in the midst of the worst recession since the 1930s, and I think it's fair to say there is no real end to that in sight. Now, of course, all the talk is about whether Tim Geithner's latest scheme, the TARPs or the TELFs or whichever, feed over into issues in individual countries. Many of the assumptions that we previously had about the way in which the world financial system and the world economy was governed have now been thrown into question. And essentially there are, I think, three sets of issues. First of all, how will global governance generally need to change, particularly in terms of the oversight of the economy and of financial systems? Secondly, within that context, which undoubtedly will change, what role is there for regional blocs, whether it's the European Union or indeed the GCC? And thirdly, I think, underlying these two questions, how do we think in future about the relationships between the state and the market, and particularly the state and the financial market? And if I could just say a word or two about each in a way that I hope will set some of the context for the discussions we're going to have in the next couple of days. The G20 summit is, of course, a very visible manifestation in itself of the way in which global governance is changing. There are those who argue that the G20 may not necessarily be the best group to oversee the world's financial system. One or two cynics have said that a group which includes Argentina might be slightly odd for determining how to have a stable financial system. Whilst the G20 may not necessarily be the group you would ideally have chosen, it's quite clear that the days when we left all these things in the safe hands of the G7 are over. We no longer can think about global governance in the economic and financial area without including countries like China and India. That is quite clear. For many of us, I think it's not before time that these groups have been broadened out, and no doubt there will be difficulties in achieving coherent decision making in this broader group. But there has now been clearly a fundamental change. The Chinese are now going to be brought fully into these global decision making fora. Another indication of that you can see is that Gordon Brown is off today to Washington, but then off to Brazil and Chile as part of the preparations for the summit. I think it's right that no British Prime Minister, serving Prime Minister, has ever been to Brazil, which is rather curious. It is the case. We never really took countries like Brazil terribly seriously when it came to big issues of global governance, and now we are having to do so. And of course, Saudi Arabia is part of this group as well. Now, this, I think, will create some new opportunities and indeed rights for new members, but it will also create some obligations. I think that it will be very important for the countries being brought into these new governance structures to recognise that they are not there just to watch out for their own interests, whether nationally or regionally, but they are there to contribute to solving global problems. And that, I think, will require quite a big change on the part of countries like the Chinese, who have tended to think of going into these groups as an opportunity to protect Chinese interests. But of course, in fact, at the moment, these are groups which are making collective decisions in an attempt to solve what is clearly a systemic global economic and financial problem. And that, of course, creates an interesting question of the link between global governance groups and regional groups like the European Union and the GCC. It's been argued quite strenuously recently that the European Union needs a single voice in these global groupings. There's a very recent report by Jacques de Larosière, former managing director of the IMF, which has argued strongly that Europe doesn't help itself by representing itself in a rather diffuse way in these global groups. There's then an interesting question which we can think about in relation to the Gulf as to whether the GCC will effectively have a voice. How far will the G20 members link with other countries? There is, of course, a Saudi representative, but how will the Saudis link with the rest of the GCC when it comes to representing the interests of this region, whether it's in terms of finance ministers or central bank governors or indeed prime ministers? This crisis has had a very striking effect on the European Union. On the one hand, the euro has been seen as a protection against some of the strains and stresses created by systemic crisis in the financial system. And indeed, countries which have previously not been very interested in becoming a member of the euro have decided that this is something that they would be find a useful additional protection for them. I mean, no one thinks particularly of the Icelandic case, where in the middle of the crisis they've decided that the euro would perhaps be a better place for them to be. So it's created incentives for coming together on a regional basis to try to create some regional defences against instability. But of course, it's also created strains within those regional systems as well. And if you talk to anyone in Eastern Europe at present, you can hear those strains very loudly indeed, as they have said, well, we were part of this single financial market, but when trouble struck, the banks from the Western countries who were operating in our countries withdrew their liquidity back home and left us to fend for ourselves. So it's posed some interesting challenges about how regional groupings work under conditions of stress. And I think many people have begun to conclude in Europe that we either need more Europe or we need less Europe, and that the position that we're currently in is a rather unstable one. We say we have a single European financial market, but in fact, at times of stress, it does not behave like a single financial market. And the national regulators actually protect their own interests. Now, I think this creates some interesting lessons that may have some relevance to the GCC. Of course, here you have common problems, though they are somewhat different in different places. In economic terms, I think Dubai has a rather different issue, having had a major property price boom, than some of the other countries. And in one sense, you can see that the crisis has given further stimulus towards the development of cooperation, among the GCC countries. And there was a heads of government meeting in December, which once again reaffirmed the impetus towards a single currency for the GCC. That, of course, hasn't been ratified yet in individual countries in the Gulf, and that process may take some time, and clearly the deadline is still to be set. But it's interesting that the impulse was to say, yes, we must get together, but I have to say, I think there are still some big questions about what the implications of that would be. I was at the biennial banking conference, which I delivered the opening speech at yesterday in Bahrain, and had lunch with the various central bank governors from the region, who were quite pensive about all the implications of a single currency in terms of the free movement of capital around the region and how regulation would be aligned from one country to another in order to make a single currency work. And I think that what's gone on in Europe in the last year, which has been an unhappy experience, frankly, creates some interesting lessons and challenges, which I think are going to be extremely relevant for the Gulf in the next few years. On the third point, the last point, the relationships between the state and the markets, it's quite clear that changes are required. For a long time, we have operated under the shadow, perhaps, of Mrs. Thatcher's famous comment that you can't buck the market. And indeed, if you recall, James Carville, the Clinton's big political advisor, who said the bond market, the US bond market, was more important than the president. Well, we don't hear that now quite in the same way, because it's quite clear that even though in one sense you can't buck the market, the market can clearly buck itself. And we don't hear now that the bond market is more powerful than President Obama. And these rather foolish observations, I think, have now been replaced by some great uncertainties about just what kind of underpinning of market activity you need to create a stable financial and economic system. And it's very clear by what's happened in the last few months that markets rely on states for their continued existence at times of stress. This, I think, means that in the future we will have a much more grown-up debate about the role of the state in markets. And the casual denigration of the authorities and of regulators, I think, we won't hear about so much in the future. As someone who spent most of his life as a public official, I quite welcome that. I was struck when I did an executive program at Stanford a few years back, and at the end of it, and it was mainly people from the private sector in America, and I was from the British government. And at the end of it, there was a rather, sadly, rather drunken party, I'm ashamed to say that, in Kuwait, but where the guy who was a legal counsel for IBM put his arm around me and he said, you know, he said, I've enjoyed working with you. He said, you know, when I saw someone from the government coming, I thought, you know, what the hell's this? He said, but, you know, you could get a job. And he meant that as a compliment. I mean, he clearly was trying to be nice. But that was the mindset, that anyone working for a government was someone who clearly couldn't get a job in a real business. And I think that we will have a somewhat more adult debate about the roles of public authorities and the way in which this symbiotic relationship between the state and the markets really works. But redefining that relationship will be quite tricky without destroying the dynamism of the markets on which we depend. Some new kind of social contract is going to be needed between the state and the markets. And this will now need to be renegotiated. In a sense, it's being renegotiated as we speak. The latest Geithner plan this week involves a curious kind of public-private partnership to resolve this market problem, which couldn't have been imagined even 18 months ago. And I think what is also, and this will be my final point, is that this renegotiation of global governance, this rethinking of the role of regional groups within global governance, and this renegotiation of the relationship between the state and the markets will, I think, all have to be done with much more intense interest from the broader population. It's quite clear in the US and the UK that many people are very anxious and indeed very angry about what has happened. And that's not a surprise, and it's not unreasonable. I think we will hear echoes of that in different ways in different places, depending on the structure of democracy and the expression of public opinion. It's quite clear that in China, this is what the authorities are most worried about. And China is not, in any conventional sense, a democracy, but that does not mean that their authorities are not extremely anxious about the social consequences, the potential unrest arising from this global recession, and are very much aware that the decisions they are making are being watched by the population. And that is very, very visible, of course, in democracies like the US and the UK. And this will make decision making more difficult. There is clearly a temptation to adopt populist feel-good responses, which may be regretted in the future. One obvious type of response, of course, is the protectionist packages that have been put together in some countries. We've seen some of that in Europe. That's a very dangerous response, we know from the experience of the 1930s, but it's not the only one. We've now had calls in both the US and the UK for retrospective legislation of a punitive kind to deal with people who are perceived to have taken excess rewards from financial institutions which are now in receipt of government support. Indeed, some legislation like that has actually passed the US Congress, and President Obama, rather carefully, I think, has warned against moving in that direction, however immediately attractive it may seem. On the other hand, I think it's vital not to waste a good crisis, and it may be that governments can do things on the tax system, can do things on redistribution and on some control of the excesses of financial rewards, which there have been in financial markets, so they can do things which were not possible, which could not have been envisaged even a year or so ago. Striking the balance between doing things that make sense and that are possible in this crisis and will attempt to correct past excesses, and the balance between that and not tipping over into populist reactions which will create more uncertainty and which will damage the markets in the long run, is going to be a very, very difficult balance to strike. And doing so, I think, means that in the next next year or two, I think politicians will earn their money in most countries in the world. But they will also, I think, in doing so, need input from others, and I hope that academic institutions and academic programs can make an important contribution, because there are new challenges which politicians have not thought about, and where we really do need some real-time interchange, I think, between the academic community and the political system. And that's why this particular program, I think, has turned out to be extremely well-timed. It's addressing the central issues which countries face, and I'm sure that is exactly the same for the UK and for Kuwait and other countries in the Gulf. I think this particular programme and David Held's Centre for Global Governance, within which it sits in the LSE, are excellent vehicles for developing thinking on new governance arrangements and how governments need to respond to the challenges posed by this crisis. So this, I think, is a very timely conference on exactly the right set of issues, and I hope that you all have a very constructive 2 days. And I end where I began by thanking Mr. Al-Shamlan and KFAS for making it all possible. Thank you.
شكرا للسير هاوارد ديفيز مدير جامعة لندن سكول اوف ايكونومكس. ضيوفنا الأفاضل، الآن المحاضرة الرئيسية في حفل الافتتاح لمعالي الأستاذ بدر مشاري الحميضي وزير المالية السابق الكويتي، فليتفضل لإلغاء محاضرته.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. دكتور علي، سير ديفيز، ladies and gentlemen, by now it's clear that the whole world, including the GCC countries, is facing a global financial and economic crisis. The spread of this crisis on the world has happened so fast that couldn't enable decision makers in many countries to take enough measures to prevent panics, collapse of stock market, and bankruptcy of some of the enterprises and financial institutions. Government reactions to the global financial crisis has been concentrated on, first, stabilizing the financial system by injecting enough liquidity in banks and financial institutions, and providing some kind of protection to deposit and falling asset portfolio. Second, adopting stimulus economic packages to activate the economy in an attempt to prevent recession and to create job to lower unemployment rates, which have risen to unacceptable levels. The total value of the stimulus packages announced so far by 20 countries exceed $2 trillion. In spite of the above, many experts believe that what has been done so far is not enough to prevent world recession. The GCC countries are in much better position to alleviate the negative impact of this crisis on their economies, thanks to their financial surpluses accumulated over the last 5 years due to high oil prices. Although there are financial surpluses in the GCC countries caused by conservative fiscal policies, but the investment sentiment in the region has been hurt by this fall, fearing budget deficit in these countries. This resulted in emigration of large workforce away from the GCC countries due to either delayed or cancelled project. This reverses the growth in demographic trends, reducing local consumption and demand or real estate buying or leasing and any other businesses. In less than 9 months, oil prices dropped from as high as $147 per barrel to less than 40 per barrel, a declining of 72%. Members have taken decision to cut oil productions. During the last 6 months, the total cut in oil production was 4.2 million barrels per day. This is the highest. This is the highest cut since 1980. It is no secret that GCC countries are still highly dependent on oil revenues, which account for more than 35% of their GDP and about 85% of their budget revenues. The break-even price for oil for most of the government budget of the GCC countries is expected to be higher than the forecasted prices for the year 2009. Therefore, budget deficits are expected in the GCC countries more for 2009. MEED estimated that GCC government will report a budget deficit of $5 billion in 2009 versus $225 billion of surpluses in 2008. HSBC Bank estimated that GDP growth for 2008 will be between 4.3% to 7% for Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Bahrain, and UAE. Qatar will rise a growth of 15.2%. The bank estimate for 2009 is much lower than in 2008, with less than 4% for Kuwait, UAE, and Saudi Arabia, and rising to 9.8% for Qatar. In monetary value, the total GDP of GCC countries will decrease from over $1 trillion US dollars in 2008 to above $775 billion in 2009, a total drop of 25%. From September 2008 till now, the stock market indices ranges from 44% to high as much as 60%. This fall in the stock market has caused the valuation of the asset and reduction in enterprise market values, especially the investment company, let alone the disappearance of the individual wealth in the region. The liberalization of investment laws in GCC countries, the elimination of some of the investment barriers, the opening up of the infrastructure to private investment, and the high rating of physical capability of the individual GCC countries attracted local and international investors to region. Because of the global financial crisis, local liquidity dried up and became very difficult to have access to overseas funding, and thus credit flow is tightening and becoming scarce. The direct impact of unavailability of adequate liquidity to private sector caused cancellation of project and investment plans. According to MEED recent estimate, the total value of the delayed and or cancellation or uncancelled project reached about $100 billion in the GCC countries. Morgan Stanley estimated that $273 billion of project value under execution has been cancelled or postponed in UAE only. It's evident that the private sector in the GCC country is badly affected by the global financial crisis. At the moment, the GCC private sector is challenged by the following difficulties. First, a drop in the asset values which limit its ability to borrow. Second, limited or no expansion in business activity in the short term, and thus lack of investment appetite, let alone the scale down size from what it was in 2008. Third, drying up of liquidity and the credit with together conditions on lending, preventing the flow of money from banks to business enterprises. In the view of the above, the size of the private sector in the GCC countries will be smaller than what it was in the first half of 2008, and its roles in the economic development were reduced. The so far GCC governments respond to counteract the impact of a global financial crisis on their economy has been monetary and not physical. The government of Kuwait made several attempts to stop the collapse of stock market without success. Central Bank of Kuwait has been instrumental in protecting the banking system. Qatar has recently announced a government decision to buy out all portfolio available at the banks at their original cost. This will cost the government about $2 billion. UAE has injected about $50 billion in the banking sector. In addition, all GCC governments have lowered interest rates, provided deposit guarantees, and injected liquidity in the banks. The GCC countries are now part of unusual financial crisis with a global diminishes. Global governments are now racing to prevent recession and to countermeasure the impact of this crisis on their economies. The fear of rising unemployment, reduction in consumption locally and internationally, and the stability of the financial system are the major concern of all government. The global corporation is now needed more than ever to get out from the expected deep recession or maybe the world depression. Gulf countries are not different from the rest of the world, and cooperation between their government is a must at the present to prevent further panics, economic slowdown, and further deterioration of the stock market. The wealth accumulated by these countries during the last 5 years will enable them to take effective policies to counteract the impact of a global financial crisis. The current crisis demanded the GCC countries to review their regulation and monetary and control policies. New legislation must be adopted to arm central banks and other regulatory bodies with means and resources to act immediately. An economic body has to be established in each country to be responsible in the case of economic crisis and to take full responsibility for action and countermeasures. In an open and dynamic economy, transparency and accountability are the main drives for effective corporate governance. This crisis has clearly surfaced the shortcoming in corporate governance among all the GCC countries. Politics in case of economic crisis has to be set aside to avoid delays, unfruitful debate, and unprofessional interference. Time is of the essence in such situation and cannot wait for political compromises and trade-offs. There has been no time as crucial as now for the GCC government to increase its capital formation and expenditure. It is essential to proceed with the execution of feasible projects and or infrastructure projects that have been long due. The aggressive implementation of private-public partnership, PPP, will send the right signal to encourage local investment. Clear laws and regulation in this regard will stress transparency and equity are of utmost importance. All barriers facing the participation of the private sector in the economic development must be waived out or reduced. Saudi Arabia, UAE, Oman have gone a long way in encouraging the participation of the private sector in mega infrastructure projects. Unfortunately, Kuwait is still lagging behind, and the loan number 7 for 2008 suffers many deficiencies, and it is far from encouraging private sector participation. The growth of the private sector in the GCC countries during the last 5 years was one of the important achievements that should be protected. It has helped the GCC government to alleviate the most important deficiencies in their economy, which is the large dependency on oil revenues and an ability to realize diversification. In addition, the private sector took some of the burden from the public sector to employ nationals. As such, the GCC government must look beyond the banking sector and provide bailout packages and assets protection to the private sector. The issue of employment of a new entrant to the labor force in the region, described by its young population, is among the top priority of the public sector in the GCC countries, given the current and the predicted economic environment and the impact of the global crisis. It is unlikely that the private sector will contribute to the creation of jobs in 2009 and maybe in 2010, let alone the expected layoffs by enterprises facing financial difficulties and or suffering decline in business activities. The GCC government need to act decisively and swiftly to prevent further deterioration in their economies. Time is the essence, and late decision will cost more. Bailout and stimulus package are now overdue, and this is the proper time for the using of accumulated financial services. Thank you for your attention.
شكرا للأستاذ معالي بدر الحميضي وزير المالية الكويتي السابق على المحاضرة القيمة. حضورنا الكرام، أود أن أنوه بأن أولى جلسات المؤتمر العالمي الأول سوف تبدأ بعد نصف ساعة من الآن. سيكون هناك حفل شاي في الدور الأرضي في بهو مؤسسة الكويت التقدم العلمي. دعوة للجميع لحضور حفل الشاي، حفل الشاي المقام في هذا المؤتمر العالمي الأول. وشكرا للجميع لحضوركم في هذا الصباح، والسلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.